Have you ever stared at a broken electronic device and felt that mix of frustration and resignation before tossing it in the trash? Michael J. Geyer wants you to know there's a better way. His book, How to Diagnose and Fix Everything Electronic, has become something of a cult classic among DIY enthusiasts and professional technicians alike. What makes this guide special isn't just its comprehensive technical information, but Geyer's infectious enthusiasm for repair that began when he was just 6 years old. By age 8, he was running a neighborhood repair service that caught the attention of the Miami News. This passion would lead him through a remarkable career spanning service centers across Miami, Boston, and Seattle, where he often solved the most challenging technical problems that stumped others. Beyond being a practical manual, this book represents a counter-movement to our throwaway culture, a philosophy that values sustainability, resourcefulness, and the deep satisfaction that comes from understanding how things work and bringing them back to life. There's something almost magical about fixing electronics, a thrill that Geyer compares to playing God or perhaps Dr. Frankenstein as you breathe new life into inanimate objects. This visceral satisfaction comes from transforming a lifeless circuit board into a functioning device, watching screens light up and speakers crackle back to life. This isn't just about saving money, though that's certainly a benefit. It's about the intellectual satisfaction of solving puzzles, the environmental responsibility of keeping devices out of landfills, and the preservation of technologies that might otherwise be lost to time. Whether it's restoring a vintage radio, repairing a modern smartphone, or troubleshooting a beloved game console, each successful repair brings its own unique satisfaction. In our era of planned obsolescence and disposable consumer goods, traditional repair shops have largely disappeared from main streets and shopping centers. Yet, DIY repair remains not only viable, but deeply rewarding. Without labor charges, fixing your own devices becomes cost-effective, often requiring just a few dollars in parts to solve problems that might cost hundreds at a service center. More importantly, it provides an absorbing hobby that exercises your brain in ways few other activities can. There's a detective-like satisfaction in diagnosing problems, identifying solutions, and executing repairs. Each repair project builds upon previous experience, developing both technical skills and problem-solving abilities. The economic benefits extend beyond just fixing your own stuff. Repair skills allow you to resurrect free broken items others have discarded or purchase non-working devices for pennies on the dollar. A broken laptop might be acquired for $50, fixed with a $20 part, and either used or resold for $300 or more. Some people even turn these skills into profitable side hustles or full businesses, specializing in particular devices or offering general repair services. In a world increasingly concerned with sustainability, keeping electronics functioning longer represents a meaningful environmental contribution, reducing e-waste and the demand for new manufacturing. But when is repair worth the effort? Geyer acknowledges that not every device can or should be saved. Like a doctor assessing a patient's prognosis, a good technician develops judgment about which repairs make sense. Some devices may be too damaged for practical repair, or the time and cost required might exceed replacement value. Water damage, for instance, often proves particularly challenging and costly to address. However, even terminal electronics have value. Their components can be salvaged for future projects. As Geyer notes, a stack of old circuit boards loaded with capacitors, transistors, connectors, and other components is as essential as your soldering iron. These salvaged parts not only reduce costs for future repairs, but also provide valuable practice materials for developing repair skills. Setting up a proper workspace is the foundation of successful electronics repair. Just as surgeons need sterile operating rooms, electronic technicians need appropriate environments to minimize errors and maximize efficiency. Your workbench should be in a lockable room away from children and pets, as opened electronics can present various hazards. While basements work well, they may require dehumidifiers and safe heating to address dampness and cold. The bench itself should be large, sturdy, and light-colored for better visibility of small components. Carpeting is problematic for the bench surface. Parts get lost, static builds up, though tight pile carpeting on the floor has both advantages and disadvantages. Proper electrical service is critical. Modern three-wire grounded outlets protect both you and sensitive components. Power strips help prevent ground loops, while proper lighting, swing arm, fluorescent, or LED lamps, ensures you can see what you're doing without generating excessive heat. Avoid eco bulbs that emit ultraviolet light and radio frequency interference that can affect sensitive measurements. Essential tools begin with a quality digital multimeter, DMM, for measuring voltage, resistance, and current. While high-end models offer greater precision, mid-range DMMs, $20 to $50, are perfectly adequate for most repair work. Avoid the cheapest models, which often provide inaccurate readings and may have dangerous insulation shortcomings. An ESR meter is another crucial tool, measuring equivalent series resistance in capacitors, a common failure point in modern electronics that standard capacitance meters can't detect. These once expensive instruments are now available for around $60 online and will quickly pay for themselves by identifying failed capacitors that look fine to conventional tests. The oscilloscope, while intimidating to beginners, is perhaps the most essential diagnostic instrument. It allows you to visualize electrical signals, revealing crucial information about circuit behavior. Digital scopes have largely replaced analog versions, though each has advantages and disadvantages. When selecting a scope, ensure the sample rate exceeds the bandwidth, ideally by 10x, for accurate real-time sampling. Quality soldering tools are non-negotiable. For general circuit board work, a 40 to 70 watt iron is ideal. Temperature requirements vary. Leaded solder needs 375 to 400 F, while lead-free requires 675 to 700 F. The best setups include a base unit with step-down transformer that isolates the tip from AC power. Quality irons from reputable manufacturers will last for years, making them worthwhile investments. Beyond the basic measurement and soldering equipment, several other tools and supplies are essential for effective electronic repair work. Desoldering tools come in various forms, each with specific advantages. Solder wick, desoldering braid, consists of fine copper wire strands that draw up molten solder through capillary action. It's one of the most versatile desoldering tools available and works best for small jobs. For larger amounts of solder, spring-loaded solder suckers provide powerful vacuum action, though they can generate static charges, potentially damaging to sensitive components. A comprehensive set of hand tools is vital. You'll need jeweler screwdrivers in various sizes and styles, Phillips, flat blade, hex, and Torx to access modern electronics. Diagonal cutters, dykes, are essential for clipping component leads and stripping wire insulation. Needle-nose pliers help grab components and reach into tight spaces, while hemostats, similar to needle-nose pliers but with a locking mechanism, provide grip without continuous hand pressure. With today's miniaturized electronics, magnification is essential. Choose a head-worn magnifier with glass lenses that can flip up when not needed. If you wear glasses, look for adjustable focus options. Several chemicals prove invaluable in the repair process. Contact cleaner spray removes oxidation from electrical contacts. Isopropyl alcohol, 91% or higher, effectively cleans tape paths and heads. Naphtha, available as cigarette lighter fluid, remarkably removes grime, adhesive residue, and solder rosin without harming most plastics. Other useful supplies include heatsink grease for improving thermal transfer between components and heatsinks, heat shrink tubing for insulating wire connections, and small cups for organizing screws and parts during disassembly. Internet access has largely replaced reference books for component data and disassembly instructions, making a nearby computer invaluable. As your repair skills advance, you might consider adding nice-to-have tools like a variable power supply, transistor tester, capacitance meter, signal generator, frequency counter, analog meter, bench vise, hot air rework station, and component cooler spray. A stock of common components, resistors, transistors, voltage regulators, fuses, and especially electrolytic capacitors, saves time and frustration when replacements are needed. Once you open a product's case, you leave behind the protected world of consumer electronics and enter territory where serious injury is possible. Even battery-operated devices can step up voltage enough to cause harm. Learning proper safety techniques is essential before attempting repairs. Electric shock represents the most obvious hazard. Always remove watches and jewelry before working on live equipment. Most devices use their metal chassis as circuit ground, creating shock risk if you simultaneously touch it and a point above 40-50 volts. The danger comes from current passing through your body, with hand-to-hand paths being particularly hazardous as current flows across your chest and through your heart. The one-hand rule, keeping one hand behind your back while probing, provides basic protection by preventing current from flowing across your chest. Wearing shoes with insulating soles adds another layer of safety. Switching power supplies connected directly to AC house current presents special dangers, as do capacitors that can store charge long after power is removed. Never discharge capacitors by direct shorting. Use a resistor to bleed off energy safely. Physical injuries are another concern. Component leads, metal shield edges, and even plastic parts can cause cuts. Lasers in optical drives and intensely bright projector lamps can damage vision, while hot components can cause burns. Eye protection is essential, as clipped component leads have an uncanny ability to fly toward your eyes. Your hearing is also at risk, particularly when working on audio equipment, where touching the wrong spot can produce ear-damaging volume levels. When testing with headphones, use over-ear types positioned slightly away from your ears. While electronics can harm you, you can also damage the equipment. Working with powered circuits creates opportunities for accidental shorts. Test probes can easily slip off solder pads and bridge connections, potentially sending voltages where they don't belong and destroying sensitive components in microseconds. After completing repairs, ensuring the product is safe becomes your responsibility. Always reinstall internal shields and covers. Manufacturers don't waste money on unnecessary parts. If you accidentally melt wire insulation with your soldering iron, fix it immediately using appropriate methods. Never rely on electrical tape for long-term safety. Finally, remember the critical rule of AT. Always test everything. Even the simplest repairs need testing. Let repaired equipment run for hours at normal operation to verify your fix before closing it up. Effective troubleshooting requires seeing beyond individual components to understand the entire system. Like doctors diagnosing patients or detectives solving crimes, top technicians consider the bigger picture, design goals, intended operation, and how sections interact. This holistic approach means understanding not just what each part does, but how they work together to achieve the product's purpose. For instance, in a modern smartphone, a charging issue might stem from the battery, charging circuit, power management IC, or even software, all interconnected systems that must be considered together. Electronic devices work because carefully designed circuits give electrons no choice but to follow specific paths. When components fail or design errors occur, electrons find unintended routes, creating malfunctions. At its core, troubleshooting means identifying whether electrons have found paths that shouldn't exist or are blocked from paths that should. Consider a simple LED circuit. If it's not lighting up, the problem could be an open circuit preventing electron flow, a short circuit creating an unwanted path, or component degradation changing resistance values. A machine is an extension of its designer, much like a concerto is of its composer. Products tend to reflect manufacturing companies' characteristics rather than individuals. Understanding these company-specific quirks helps in repairs. You'll recognize patterns like one manufacturer's tendency toward imaging chip failures or another's use of too thin metal parts and tape transports. For example, certain laptop brands consistently show issues with hinges due to cost-cutting in materials, while others might have recurring power supply problems due to aggressive thermal designs. Yesterday's tech products were like zombies with simple parts: an ear, microphone, memory, recording tape, mouth, speaker, but no brain. Today's gear is cranium heavy, with computing power replacing mechanical linkages. Software controls sequencing and movement, with malfunctions potentially originating in mechanics, sensors, software, or their interactions. A modern washing machine, for instance, might fail not because of mechanical problems, but due to a faulty sensor sending incorrect data to the control board, or software misinterpreting valid sensor readings. Professional quality repair requires meticulous attention to detail. You're a surgeon operating on a mechanical organism. As the medical saying goes, first, do no harm. While even the best techs occasionally ruin machines, your aim should be getting in and out as cleanly as possible. This means proper documentation before disassembly, organizing removed parts, using appropriate tools, and maintaining anti-static precautions when necessary. A common beginner's mistake is fixating on symptoms that fit your diagnosis while ignoring anomalies. This leads to frustrating dead ends. Remember, if a puzzle won't fit together, there's a piece missing. Often, the anomaly you're pushing aside is the real clue. For example, if a printer shows paper jams but only with certain paper types, focusing solely on the paper path while ignoring the slight grinding noise might cause you to miss a wearing gear that's the root cause. Successful troubleshooters maintain intellectual honesty, acknowledging when observations don't fit their working theory and adjusting their approach accordingly. Electronic devices can develop problems ranging from obvious to obscure. Modern circuitry is more reliable than in the analog age, yet products have shorter lifespans due to greater complexity, more components, and interactions. Today's small signal boards with machine-soldered chips fail less often, but power supplies, connectors, and cables remain vulnerable. Several common failure patterns emerge across electronic devices. Infant mortality refers to products that fail very soon after being put into service, typically due to imperfect solder joints, molecular-level semiconductor flaws, or design errors. Mechanical wear affects moving parts far more often than electronic components. Bearings wear out, lubrication dries up, belts stretch, switches bend, gears split. Connections are mechanical and frequently fail. Suspect any non-soldered contacts pressed against each other: switches, relays, plugs, sockets, ribbon cables, and connectors. Corrosion from age and contact sparking is the primary culprit. Though designed to be molecularly bonded and permanent, solder joints frequently fail and develop resistance. Many bad joints are visually identifiable by dull, mottled, or cracked appearance, but some look perfect while hiding incomplete molecular bonding beneath the surface. Heat is electronics' greatest enemy. Power supplies, backlight inverters, and computer motherboards are especially vulnerable. Overheating from excessive current can quickly destroy semiconductors and resistors, while normal operating heat gradually degrades electrolytic capacitors. When diagnosing problems, take a history first, like a good doctor with a patient. Key factors include the manufacturer — some companies have recurring design issues — age, abuse history, circumstances of failure, and any strange behavior preceding the breakdown. Internet research on the specific model can save hours by revealing common failures and solutions others have discovered. Before disassembling a device, examine it externally and form a hypothesis about its failure. Use logic to eliminate variables and narrow down potential problem areas. If anything happens when power is applied, even just an LED lighting up, the device isn't truly dead, indicating the power supply is at least partially working. Today's electronic products can contain hundreds or thousands of components. To navigate these complex circuits, three types of diagrams serve as roadmaps. Block diagrams, showing functional sections and basic interconnections, like a map showing cities and highways. Schematic diagrams, showing all components and connections, like a street-level map. And pictorial diagrams, showing component placement on circuit boards, like landmarks. Reading a schematic is like reading music. Identifying components is just the beginning. Understanding how they form stages and sections and how those work together is vital to finding malfunctioning parts. Each component on a schematic has a unique call number, unrelated to the part number printed on the component itself. These numbers begin with a letter specifying the component type, followed by numbers indicating the section and a unique identifier, like R201, L17, Q158. A good schematic is logically laid out with signal flow from left to right and clear spacing between stages. It includes call numbers, part numbers, and component values. Great schematics add signal flow arrows, voltage readings, and even scope waveforms at test points, making troubleshooting much faster and more accurate. Electronic devices are organized like books. Components form stages that work together, creating signal flow from input to output. Each stage performs a specific function, contributing to the overall processing. Signal flow typically proceeds left to right within and between stages, with sensitive input stages on the left side of the schematic and output stages on the right. When opening modern electronic products, the apparent complexity can seem overwhelming. To navigate this complexity, you must recognize major sections. Every device has a power supply, input section, signal processing, and output section. Power supplies appear in various forms, from simple batteries to complex switching supplies. Input sections collect and amplify signals before processing. Signal processing circuitry forms the bulk of most devices, manipulating incoming information for output. Output stages prepare signals for speakers, displays, motors, or transmitters, typically requiring current amplification. Getting inside modern electronic devices has become increasingly difficult compared to earlier days when access was expected for tube replacement and maintenance. Today's manufacturers deliberately seal cases with hidden snaps and minimal access points due to miniaturization and liability concerns. Despite these challenges, almost any device can be safely opened with patience and proper technique. When removing screws, keep track of different lengths, as using too long a screw in the wrong hole during reassembly can damage internal components. Count screws as you remove them and store them in labeled cups. For hidden snaps, look for slots where a screwdriver might release internal catches, or press along case seams to find points where the plastic gives slightly. Ribbon cables have largely replaced traditional wiring in small electronics. Before removing a ribbon, mark both the ribbon and socket with a Sharpie to ensure proper orientation during reassembly. Examine the socket for latches, either slide type with tabs at the ends or flip-up style. Never pull a ribbon from a latched connector without opening the latch first, as this will tear the irreplaceable cable. Modern electronics are built in layers, requiring methodical disassembly to reach inner components. Each layer typically uses different screw sizes, and not all screws need removal. As you disassemble, count screws from each layer and place them in stacked cups, with the most recent layer screws in the topmost cup. After successfully completing a repair, proper reassembly is crucial. Begin by reversing the disassembly order. Install inner boards first and connect cables before covering boards with others. Check ground lands on circuit boards where screws or metal brackets make contact. Clean oxidation with contact spray or fine sandpaper to ensure reliable grounding. Proper wire placement, lead dress, is crucial. If manufacturers tacked down wires with glue or silicone, there was a reason, preventing contact with hot heat sinks, avoiding interference with sensitive signals, or preventing arcing from high voltage wires. When reassembling, ensure no wires will be crimped by circuit boards or case parts. When everything fits together properly, your repair is complete, but don't forget to always test everything. Bench test heat-generating products like receivers or projectors if your repairs could affect thermal performance. For devices like digital cameras or MP3 players, test every button and function. Then, enjoy the satisfaction of a job well done. Different electronic devices present unique challenges and common failure patterns. Understanding these specifics can dramatically improve your repair success rate. Audio amplifiers and receivers handle multiple input types and drive speakers with substantial power. Their power supplies work extremely hard, especially when driving subwoofers for movie explosions. Output stages are particularly failure-prone since they handle high current and generate substantial heat. When troubleshooting, first determine if all channels are affected, suggesting power supply issues, or just one, indicating channel-specific problems. Disc players use a focused laser beam, three-axis servo system, and substantial computing power to read microscopic optical tracks. Common problems include stretched belts preventing proper door operation, oxidized leaf switches, failed interlock switches, malfunctioning head positioning sensors, dimming laser diodes, and ribbon cable oxidation. For non-functioning players, first verify the door mechanism, including leaf switches, belts, and gears. Flat panel displays use matrix addressing, where each pixel is controlled in XY fashion. Connection failures at panel edges cause entire rows or columns to malfunction, appearing as bright lines on LCDs or dark lines on plasma screens. LCD backlights use inverters producing high voltage that frequently fail from heat stress, while LED backlit displays can experience LED failures or driver circuit problems. Video projectors use either bright lamps or LEDs, a micro-display device, and lenses to magnify the image. The most failure-prone components in hot lamp projectors are the expensive mercury vapor arc lamps and their ballast circuits. DLP projectors frequently experience color wheel failures, as these glass components spin at high speeds and are often assembled with glue that degrades from heat and UV exposure. Laptops face numerous potential failures. LSI chips with ball grid array connections can develop intermittent solder joints from thermal flexure, surface mount electrolytics fail, battery charging MOSFET transistors open, power supply jacks develop cracked solder joints, backlight inverters die, cables running through hinges break after repeated opening closing. Smartphones and tablets are incredibly dense, sophisticated devices that function as full-fledged computers. Most common problems include broken screens, bad connections at headphone and charger jacks, failing batteries, and liquid damage. Removing screens without destroying them requires finesse, especially when only replacing the digitizer while preserving the LCD.